Radio Prague News. Shops and restaurants will not be banned from advertising their goods and services solely in a foreign language. The centre-right Topo 9 party wants to propose an amendment to the asylum law that would make it mandatory for people who are granted asylum in this country to take part in integration programmes. And the Czech Republic provided close to 5 billion crowns in development aid last year. Shops and restaurants will not be banned from advertising their goods and services solely in a foreign language, the CTK news agency reported. A draft bill, which would have allowed municipalities to issue such a ban, forcing entrepreneurs to advertise in Czech as well, was rejected by deputies in the Lower House on Friday. The bill emerged in reaction to complaints from municipalities and citizens. For instance, Karlovy Vary, which has a large Russian community, pointed out that a large number of shops and restaurants only advertise their goods and services in Russian, which is often incomprehensible to the locals. Critics of the bill, led by the Civic Democratic Party, said it would be an unjustified bureaucratic intervention into local enterprise. The centre-right Topo 9 party wants to propose an amendment to the asylum law that would make it mandatory for people who are granted asylum in the Czech Republic to take part in integration programmes. The party's deputy chair, Helena Lunchadlova, presented the proposal to journalists in Prague on Friday. She said support for refugees was important and the country should admit those in need, but stressed that clear rules would have to be laid down and observed in the process. Those granted asylum would have to make an effort to integrate. Those not willing to learn Czech and comprehend our values and traditions would have to leave the country, she said. Topo 9 is also pushing for schools to provide better education about different cultures and religions in order for Czechs to be more open to foreigners. The Czech Republic provided development aid worth close to 5 billion crowns in 2015, according to a preliminary estimate published by the Czech Development Agency. The money was used to secure access to drinking water for villages in Ethiopia, finance the education of socially challenged children in Palestine, and help farmers in Afghanistan, among others. According to Deputy Foreign Minister Martin Tlapa, Czech firms have shown a growing interest in investing in the developing world, but there are few willing to invest in the poorest countries. Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka will pay a two-day working visit to Moldova on June 9th and 10th, the Office of the Government announced on Friday. The Czech Prime Minister will hold talks with his Moldovan counterpart, Pavel Filip, and President Nikolai Timofsky. The talks are expected to cover Moldova's ambition to join the EU, the crisis around Transnistria, a strip of land between the River Dniester and the eastern Moldovan border with Ukraine, governed by Russian separatists, and bilateral ties, predominantly ways of boosting business and trade. Close to 300 Roma musicians are taking part in a Roma music parade through the centre of Prague today. The event, held within the Komoro week-long Festival of Romani Culture, is attended by over a dozen music ensembles from the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Romania, Macedonia, France, Spain and Russia. The festival, which includes debates, lectures, film screenings and workshops, ends on Saturday with a gala concert. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Saturday should be partly cloudy with scattered showers and daytime highs reaching 24 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarova and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, a small Czech town aims to become an international transport hub. Czech speed skating champion Martina Sablíková has been denied the chance to compete in cycling at the Olympics in Rio. And later we hear about an exhibition of Czech fashion jewellery here in Prague. Well, that's coming up in today's programme. Pipe dream or reality? The idea of turning some of the major rivers in the Czech Republic into shortcuts for transporting goods from Asia to the main seaports of Northern Europe and across the continent is still mostly on the drawing board. But one part of that ambitious plan does seem to be shaping up, and that's focused on the South Moravian border town of Horonín. Chris Johnstone reports.
Slightly off the main motorway and rail routes between the Czech Republic and Slovakia, Hodonin is perhaps best known as the birthplace of the founder of Czechoslovakia, Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk. But local political leaders would like to put it on the worldwide map again and also tackle higher than average unemployment, hovering around 8%, by making the town a worldwide transport hub. With that target in mind, local council leaders signed a memorandum with Prague-based company DOE Europe at the end of April. And this week, a visit to sites earmarked for a massive 80-hectare transport hub took place together with Chinese company Sinohydro. A joint team of geologists and planners are due to descend on the town again in 2 weeks. Sinohydro specialises in the construction of massive canal and hydroelectric complexes worldwide. It already teamed up with the Czech company as part of the raft of partnerships and corporations deals penned during the Czech President Xi Jinping's eventful visit to Prague at the end of March. The heart of the transport hub plan is the idea of making the Morava River navigable along a new 80-kilometre stretch by deepening it in parts and building canals and other sections. That 19 billion crown undertaking could then link up the Danube in one direction to the Black Sea Romanian port of Constanta and in the other direction to the Rhine and North Sea ports of Rotterdam and Antwerp. It's reckoned that connection could cut thousands of kilometres off the seaborne cargo routes through the Mediterranean and around Spain. DOE Europe General Manager Josef Debičko explained to Czech television this week how the cooperation with the Chinese company could pan out.
We are working together today with an eye on the best projects that are proceeding worldwide. They have around 450 different projects around the world, whether it's in South Africa, Latin America, or North America. We want to compare our different technological capabilities and find compromises where necessary. But for us, the target is to build something at the very top level from a technological point of view.
Hodonin has hopes that the container traffic terminal for goods shipped on the waterway could be combined with the nearby motorway and rail links and possibly a newly created cargo airport as well, and also nearby gas and oil pipelines. Up to 3,000 jobs could be created directly at the terminal and in spin-off jobs related to it. Some experts are already seeing this piece of the Central European Waterways puzzle as a first key step in the much more ambitious Danube-Oder-Elbe canal project, backed notably by Czech head of state, Miloš Zeman.
That report was by Chris Johnstone. Three-time Olympic speed skating champion and time trial cyclist Martina Sablikova may be out of the upcoming Rio Games. On Thursday, the UCI published a comprehensive list of all countries that had qualified for the event, but Sablikova, her coach and others were shocked to learn that the Czech Republic wasn't among them. Jan Wellinger has more.
When competitor Martina Sablikova finished 12th in her time trial at the World Championships in Richmond, Virginia last year, she, her coach, the Olympic Committee and others were certain she had clinched a place on a reduced list of 10 nations to qualify directly for the event at the Summer Olympic Games in Rio. Now it appears the mission was never accomplished. At fault may be basic misunderstanding of the rules. Tomáš Macek is a journalist for the daily Mladá Fronta Dnes, which first reported the story Thursday. He spoke to Czech radio's flagship station Radiožurnál earlier.
I think a mistake was made in the interpretation of the rules. These state that the 10 best countries in the time trialed in the World Championship 2015 qualify automatically for a spot at the Olympics. But another section explains that those racing in the time trial also have to be chosen from riders who also took part in the mass start.
Ms. Sablikova and her team were assured they had done enough and never questioned she had qualified, accepting congratulations from various circles on her success. And that dream could now be dashed. Additional spots for the time trial race were filled according to the world rankings as of May 31, 2016. In the Czech Republic, only 46th was not eligible. As it stands, 18 nations with a total of 25 riders will be taking part in the time trial competition. Learning the news, the racer's trainer, Petr Novák, was understandably less than pleased. He reacted that millions of crowns had been spent in preparing for the Olympics for nothing. Later, he expressed the hope that a solution might still be found, perhaps in the form of a wildcard entry. Others, though, aren't optimistic. Cycling official Miroslav Janot says the only hope is if one of the qualifying countries were to give up its spot. That highly unlikely.
You have a list from which 25 racers for the time trial were recruited. In my opinion, it's 99% over.
Martina Sáblíková, meanwhile, herself issued a statement making clear that even if things don't come off this year, she won't be giving up on cycling anytime soon. And she had words of thanks for her many fans and well-wishers.
That was Jan Wellinger, and now it's time for the arts, in which Jan takes us to an exhibition of fashion jewellery right here in central Prague.
Handmade Dreams is an exhibition of contemporary costume jewellery now on at the Czech Centre in Prague. On view are pieces by some of the Czech Republic's top fashion and costume jewellery manufacturers and designers. And the show lasts throughout the month of June. I spoke to curator Petr Nový of the Museum of Glass and Jewellery in Jablonec nad Nisou. The first thing I asked about was how Jablonec historically had become so central to the jewellery-making business.
This is still the mystery. Why directly Jablonec? Why Jablonec was the biggest jewellery centre in the world from the 19th century? And it's a fortune, it's a nature, it's a communication. Communications which are close to big road from Czech to Germany. And definitely everything started in big amounts in the 60s of the 19th century, because in this period came the big businessmen from Hamburg, Berlin, Paris, London, directly to Jablonec to make business in this town.
At the opening of the show yesterday at the Czech Center here in the Czech capital, you mentioned that between the wars, that Czech jewelry was in fact one of the biggest export articles from Czechoslovakia.
Yes. Only the export for costume jewelry was about 11% of all export of everything from Czechoslovakia, and the world amount of jewelry in the world market from Jablonec was 80%. Only 20% came for Venice, US, England, France, and Germany. So it was really a very, very successful period. And still is costume jewelry from Jablonec popular in the world. And the amount is about 5% in the world market.
And is it an oversimplification, or can it be said that this market or its place in the world market was damaged by the period which came later by the communist regime? Did it have a negative impact?
They were not only communists. The first big crash was the big crash in the 30s. Then definitely World War II. And this period started the big competition in the foreign markets. The home competition, for example, in Japan, in China, in India. And this was the reason why we haven't known not 80%, but only 5% on the world market.
Fashion jewelry and costume jewelry are terms which are often interchanged. Technically speaking, are there big differences? By definition, is costume jewelry in terms of materials less expensive or not as rare as, for example, fine jewelry? Is that the main definition?
I think it's one of the possibility definitions. And yes, definitely costume or fashion jewelry, it's not so expensive like the jewelry. But they are, for example, pieces which are made for fashion houses. For the fashion houses like Jean-Paul Gaultier, for example. And then it's a question, if is this piece jewelry or costume jewelry and what it is. So I think the material is not only reason for the difference, and it's the same situation like strictly lines between design and glass art nowadays. So I think it's perhaps very important for curators like me, but not so important for the customers.
If we turn to the exhibition, what was, say, the main principle which was established early on?
I think that the first reason was design, definitely, because I said it's the costume jewelry from Czech Republic is exported to worldwide, so we have some pieces which are inspired by French market, for example, some for U.S. customers, and I think it's very useful for visitor that the message is simply the costume jewelry from Jablonec or from Czech Republic is colorful, is full of invention. It's not only tradition, it's not only traditional, it's not only imitation of 19th or 20th century designs, but it's still really very, very important design type of the craftsmanship.
There's an expression in English which is to push the envelope, which means to kind of expand what something can be, in this case, jewelry. On the one hand, it struck me seeing the exhibition that many of the pieces, they retained kind of a classic feel, were very refined in their sensibility. But is uniqueness important here as well? Because obviously the name of the exhibition, it includes the word handmade.
Yes, it is, because it's a unity mostly of machine-made semi-products which are completed by hands with the fantasy from the creator.
One thing that is very striking about the exhibition is not just the items on display, but the element that was brought in by designer Jakub Berdych. It's a very clever system of display, basically kind of display cases on tripod stands. They basically look like film spotlights. The cases are round, they're black inside with what appears to be a kind of felt, which forms the backdrop for the jewelry itself. How did he come up with that idea, and in what ways is it effective for this kind of exhibition?
So it was from the beginning the Jakub idea. My creator idea was to presenting costume jewelry like a gem, like individuals, not like amount. And he invented or created this type of presentation. Very important thing is the practical side of this type of installation. So we don't need walls for hanging. We only need some floor and some place. And also it's not so heavy for transport via airplanes or ships, for example. So it's the mixture of practical sense and aesthetic sense, and I think it fits together fantastic because it's the same story like the jewelry, and you spoke about spotlights, and I think it's like to install the costume jewelry from Czech Republic to spotlights again.
It really does need to be seen because you have these stands, they kind of get that Hollywood feel when you come into the room, there's a glamour to it. There are some top firms represented in this exhibition. In terms of trends, is there anything sort of dominant right now, either in terms of mixes of materials or shapes which are proving popular?
Very popular are imitations of the nature products. It's also for glass industry, and then big pieces. Also, for glass industry, for glass designs, the big bubbles with light in glass industry. And the same story is, for example, in jewelry, the big central pieces in colors which are close to 50s or 70s. And a very popular glass now is opaline. It's white, translucent glass.
You said that every piece of jewelry has a story. Are there any interesting stories related to, say, a piece that's on view in this exhibition?
For example, we have one necklace which was designed directly for Sophia Loren, and it was a gift for this actress. And then one wedding set from seed beads which was created for one Saudi Arabian princess. And then the pieces from the glass schools, for example. And another story, interesting story, I think, is virus collection from one design studio, which was used also like the fashion decoration for our singer in European Song Contest in this year.
That was Petr Novy ending that edition of The Arts with Jan Wellinger. And if you have any comments about today's programme here on Radio Prague, please do share them with us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook or via Twitter. But that's all for now, folks. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much indeed for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.